Hello, my name is Bertel. I'm 31. Today is Wednesday, June 23rd, 2021. My partner today is Alex. We share a neighborhood. We are here as One Small Step Conversation Partners.
Okay, so my turn. My name is Alex, and I'm here today with Bertel. I am 63. And it's June 23rd, 2021. And we've just found out that we are, in fact, neighbors one street away, which is really interesting. I'd like to think if it weren't for COVID, we would know each other already. So why did you want to do this StoryCorps?
Yes. Yeah, so when we first moved to this neighborhood, we were a bit nervous. Because we were living in one county over, multicultural area. We are a multicultural family. And we're moving out to Goochland, which is a different environment. We don't know what we're getting into. And we moved in at first and we felt overwhelmingly welcome. Our neighbors on our street had, our street had a party and the neighborhood itself had a party. And we got to know a lot of people and it was great. But we moved right before November 2016. And so the election happened, and I also found out we live on probably one of the more political streets in the neighborhood. There were a lot of signs that go up. I think two of our neighbors might be Goochland Republicans, so whatever the sign is that's handed out, we get to see all of them every day during election period. And on probably three or four of our neighbors have the signs up. So it's hard to wake in and not be reminded that your neighbors are taking in the news differently than you're taking it in first thing in the morning or every time you leave the house. So after 4 years of that, one small step, the name just kind of felt appropriate. This is just kind of the least I could do to try to bridge that gap, find that peace and comfort that I felt when we first moved here. We have not felt that. And COVID has not helped since none of us have been leaving our houses. So this is my one small step. Why did you want to talk today?
Well, thanks for sharing that. I grew up with a mother who was from India and a dad who was American. So although culturally I'm considered Caucasian, I always felt like I was, a mixture, because when my mother was just dressed normally, she was, the people were prejudiced against her. And when she identified herself as East Indian, she was exotic. So from a young age, I saw this dichotomy and thought, this is really interesting. She's the same person. The only thing that's changing is people's perception of her. So I learned that. And I was called the N-word, and fortunately, my mom was, and parents said that these people are uneducated, they're ignorant, and the way to fight that is to get to know people. So that was really what drew me into this, is my whole life I was a sociology major. I've just kind of followed this whole, social demographic differences through my life. And I think this is exactly what I've always thought would help to, help get rid of prejudice. And I'd like to say I'm sorry you had that experience, and hopefully we can change that.
My wife is Indian, and she regularly wears saris and salwar kameezes around the house. Mm-hmm. And so that's what's normal for our kids. And she's subconscious, or self-conscious rather, self-conscious when she steps out, because we're often going to other Indian events. And that's actually what brought us to Manikin, or to Goochland, was we got married here at a Hindu temple here.
Oh, yeah.
And then we, we weren't living here at the time. We were living elsewhere, but when it came time to buy a house, we thought it would be nice to be in this area. The neighborhood was really nice. And I grew up in rural Virginia and never really fell in love with the suburbs, kind of wanted that quiet setting. And so, I felt fine growing up. And a lot of things people would say in college about, oh, you have to drive through that part of the state or that part of the country. Are you nervous? Are you uncomfortable? It's like I grew up there. So it was impossible for me to have that view that it was unsafe or that these people were unloving or that people were just all hateful. Because, I had very loving neighbors. We knew our neighbors very well, and I had loving teachers. And so I knew that there was much more to the story than what comes up when you look at the election map, and that pretty much in most parts of the country, a deep red area is only 50-40, that people are everywhere and we're diverse everywhere. Our neighborhood is diverse. And so it felt like I wanted to be here in part so that my kids would also have that same understanding.
How I'm curious, how have you seen prejudice, or have you seen prejudice change through your lifetime living here in Virginia? I'm curious about that.
So I've had a pretty fortunate experience, I guess. So I come from, working class folks. My grandparents on both sides probably went as far as high school, and my parents did high school. But my parents really drilled for me to focus on my education and had me going to the library and whatever free opportunities they could invest in me and public education. And, I just naturally took well to reading and writing and learning. So I was one of those students who did not have to work hard to get good grades. So teachers liked me and they invested in me. And I got accepted into William and Mary, and I had a great experience there. And growing up, I've always lived in areas that were kind of mixed race, so half black, half white. Usually we moved to once we I grew up in a trailer park. We bought a house. We were a black family between two white neighbors. And these are very working class white neighbors that even though we didn't have much money, I think they had less, but they still, like, it was very undeniable that they loved us. So a lot of stereotypes did not set in. I first encountered racism when I started dating because in my school setting, my high school was 50-50 white black, but if you were in advanced classes, I was usually one of only two black kids in the room. And you date who you're around. I was not around black kids at school. And so once I started dating, white girls were interested to me, but they all would say that did not feel safe. I mean, I only dated maybe two, but both of them felt their parents could not know about me. They would not approve. And so that was kind of my introduction, that I was in every other way the perfect student. I had a higher GPA than their daughters did. I was going to go to a better college. I was set up for success, but they wouldn't want anything to do with me. And
And
so that
they
was,
weren't even interested in meeting you and getting to know you.
So.
That's interesting. When I was in college, I went to college in Hawaii, so there were a lot of different races. And I dated a biracial man for a short period of time, and he broke it off because he said that he, being biracial, had encountered a lot of prejudice, because he didn't feel like he belonged to either community or was accepted. And he didn't want to marry somebody like me and then have our kids go through the same thing. So I thought that was really interesting.
That was one question I had for you was for you growing up, did you ever feel accepted by the Indian community or by white Americans?
We didn't have much of an Indian community. I grew up outside as in a bedroom community to New York, and we had a lot of Indian immigrants or people coming over for school coming through. And my mom, a lot of times, would hear about somebody and have them over. We were near Rutgers University, and so we kind of worked as a welcome committee. But there were no other Indian families I came from a very small town, by the way, very small, until we were in high school. And then there was one other Indian family that moved in, but they were from Trinidad. It was a very white, Protestant, WASPy town. We had the same mayor for my whole life. And he was a Republican, and I'm not, you know, I'm independent. I vote by, you know, I try to do what I think, who I think is going to do the best. But I thought, why are we voting for the same person that everybody complains about? But they vote for him, and my mom explained, because he's the Republican. And I thought, that doesn't make any more sense than the racial thing. So, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just feel so fortunate that I saw these things at an early age and saw them for what they were.
I feel fortunate now. There was resistance early on when my wife and I were dating, but her parents ultimately decided to throw the wedding for us. And I've been accepted by the Indian community here.
Wonderful.
But it's also like I'm not blind to the cultural hierarchy amongst who Indians want their daughters to date.
And yeah, that was so interesting. I've explained to my friends about the caste system and the fact that the white-black prejudice is not just American, and they were shocked. Mm-hmm. I said, oh, you know, the lighter you are in most countries around the world, the more privilege you have. So that's been eye-opening to a lot of people.
It's been grounding for me that as much as hard as the last 4 years were here, I was always grateful I was not in India. Because there's a lot going on there.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And talking to you, you're kind of on the other side of what we're bringing our kids into.
Yeah.
And so we're very much wondering what it's going to be like for them growing up here. Now, one county over, there's any number of Indian kids.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a number of them are going to be mixed, probably more white and Indian than black and Indian. But, you know, you'll see it. I don't know what to expect here when we send them off to school. And our oldest is about to start kindergarten.
Yeah.
And so we just don't know.
Well, I hope you'll look at it as an opportunity for, you know, educating people and that they'll be open to that. But yeah, it's interesting. So what's your profession?
So I've worked largely as a freelance writer. I write about tech for the web. This is very familiar for me. I would be the kind of journalist who would cover the platform that we're using to record this right now and that sort of thing. But right now I've taken a pause from writing because we had two kids, and I wrote during our first kid. Once we had a second kid, and like, I can't balance this. Two kids is a lot. So I am the full-time caretaker parent right now.
Yeah.
And what about you?
I'm an artist. In my previous life, I was an office manager for different types of businesses, advertising, money management, just, you know, wherever I was needed, because I've moved around a lot. And then as I had my children, I have two boys. When they started getting into about the age your kids were, I started taking art lessons, and now I teach in art and do portraits. So.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. so how your oldest, you said, is going to be getting ready to go to kindergarten, so you have one younger.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a handful. One,
she's an infant, so
that's a handful.
The most stressful part about this conversation for me was, where can I find an hour to have a hot mic?
Yeah.
And so I'm actually outside in our half finished shed, is half converted. And because it was really nice. It's like, I can't use this to store things. I'm going to turn this into like a studio space.
Yeah. And, well, that's ironic, because I have a garage that's being built, and I had to tell the contractor not to come until after I was done. So we got a lot in common. It's interesting.
So So what's the thing you wish people understood about your background?
I've been fortunate. I think I just wish people would take the time to get to know people. I feel like I've been viewed for the most part as white and had a lot of privilege. My mother came from a wealthy Indian family. Her father was the personal physician of the Nizam of Hyderabad, which was like a Maharaja. And my mom came to the States to learn how to fly. So she was kind of, you know, she was educated in England. So it was very, you know, I don't know what your wife's background was, but she was definitely from an elite family. And because my dad was an airline pilot, we got to travel a lot. So I'm very fortunate. In fact, the funny thing is the biggest place I encountered prejudice was in Hawaii. You think it's a melting pot, but when I tan, I get very dark, and I had my hair permed, and I had a white boyfriend at the time, and he was on the football team, and one of the black players came over and said, "What are you dating our girls for? There are few enough of them on the island. Stop me, leave her alone." And I was like, "Well, you know, thanks, but I happen to not be. It wouldn't matter, but I happen to be white." And he looked at me. But that was interesting too. But I really have been fortunate to not have had too much prejudice personally. I've just noticed it, I guess, because I grew up seeing it. So
yeah, there's a lot of it's a lot of diversity among Black people, and so we recently did Ancestry, and the results were, you're like 80-something% Black. So I am like Black on both sides predominantly, but I'm lighter than, you know, Barack Obama, Kamala Harris, Tiger Woods. I have a face full of freckles. So I've grown up with a more of a mixed person's experience. Yeah. I don't have that ability to walk into a room and people just assume what I am. People, you know, people generally assume I'm mixed, and they want to know, like, what are you? It's like, I'm Black. I'm like, your mom and your dad? I'm like, yes.
Yeah. Interesting.
And I've also had that experience when, because I'm kind of ambiguously beige, when
I love it.
I started dating my wife in college, people just assume I must be Indian.
And interesting.
When we visited India, a lot of people, I don't think they realized I was a foreigner. I was, you know, she's Indian. We're walking around with an Indian family. This guy must be Indian. And you could see the wheels turning when they would start just talking to me. And then you kind of realize, is this guy slow? He's not, he's not catching on.
That's funny.
And so you mentioned Hyderabad. We visited for the first time right before the pandemic. And that's where we were stationed, was, her family's not exclusively from Hyderabad, but like a lot of her relatives are there now.
This is bizarre.
Yes.
This was just meant to be, yeah. Interesting.
And I'm like, they're more from, like, her family's from Andhra Pradesh. Yeah. And they're predominantly from the part that's still Andhra Pradesh.
Okay.
But some of them are still in Hyderabad. And that's the nearest airport.
That's amazing.
Nearest big airport.
That's amazing. So. How about that? You know, I had another thought. The one place I encountered prejudice—it wasn't prejudice, but it was odd—was South Africa. And there, they again have the dichotomy. They've got the whites and the blacks, but they also have, you know, the Indians are actually the bottom of the totem pole there. When I went to Robben Island, where Mandela was held in prison, they showed the food. They fed people, the prisoners, different meals depending on what race you were. So if you were white, you'd have really good meals with vegetables and protein. If you were black, you know, I don't know, the next level down, the Indians had the worst meals. So that was interesting.
Oh, I did not know that.
I didn't either. And then we stayed with different families. And when we stayed with the black family, they were a Xhosa family. The woman there, everybody else in my group, it was a church mission group, was white. And I didn't realize at that point that the colored were the bottom of the totem pole. I was just doing my own thing. And the woman, the daughter there, who was an adult, kept following me around and asking me questions, and she was obviously intrigued, but I couldn't figure out what she was trying to figure out. And I'm just surmising that she was trying to figure out what this colored woman was doing, you know, with all these white people. It was interesting. So that was an interesting experience too. But you know, I've encountered more. I don't know if you call it prejudice from being the standpoint of being a woman, like in the business world. Mm-hmm. You know, the people telling me you can't, don't, shouldn't. And fortunately, my mother was a good example of how to just ignore that and do what you wanted to do. So, but it's yes. been interesting at times. Yeah. Let's see. What are your hobbies?
I do a lot of reading. I'm a member of Richmond Zen, so I do a lot of meditating and sitting.
That's right, you're Buddhist.
And yes, we do just go to parks and nature walks. I do a lot of gardening. I'm uh-huh. a big home garden, and I'm learning how to take care of flowers. Mm-hmm. I didn't grow up with a garden or any of this, so for me, this is all just sticking stuff in the ground and trying to keep it from dying. And
I'm a master gardener. I can help you with that.
That's good. I've taken comfort from the truth that most things just want to live.
Yeah.
And if you give them the right conditions to flourish, then they'll take it from there.
Right.
I think my gardening, it kind of bleeds into my politics with that uh-huh. same core foundational belief. So as you said, you were independent. How is that for you navigating talking to people about politics?
Oh, I'm pretty open. I mean, I try to let people know that I'm not judging. I try not to judge. I try to respect other people's point of view. And there are people that obviously don't. And I just, I think as I've grown, as I've gained some wisdom, I've learned that some battles are just never going to be won. So I just, if I think that there's an opportunity to do like what we're doing, where we can exchange ideas, because I don't think any one candidate or any one party has all the answers. I think it's interesting to learn new things, and the best would be if we could all work together. But that brings up another question I have for you, though, is the religion. I think that's fascinating that you're Buddhist and she's Hindu. And what have you decided to do with the kids, if you don't mind my asking, as far as religion goes?
Yeah, so far it's just with Hinduism, it's kind of, you know, you're just Hindu by birth. Mm-hmm. It's very much blended with ethnicity. Mm-hmm. And so you just share the stories and the culture with them, whereas Zen is more your kids can see you doing it, but you generally don't push it on mm-hmm. them, just because it's much more of a committed practice and less of about the stories and the cultural aspect. Those things are there, but since it's so much about the commitment, you know, if you push that on kids, they're going to push back and say you have to come to it. And so for me, it's just, he sees that, you know, he sees that dad says a lot, and she, you know, she'll see that. And they see that we have an altar mm-hmm. and that for us, we actually have like a Buddha altar, and we have a Hindu altar in a different room. And it's in a way, so I came to Zen in 2017, and it helped me understand my wife's culture so much more, because there's a lot of shared language mm-hmm. between Buddhism and Hinduism. A lot of the terms are defined very differently, but a lot of the culture, underlying culture, is the same when you go far back enough.
Yeah.
Zen, of course, has a lot of Japanese and then Chinese, but when you go back far enough, there's a lot of shared Indian culture.
Yeah.
And so I think her parents have warmed up as well too. I think seeing them see me embrace that kind of felt, I guess, more accepting on my part. That, I'm really immersing myself in this, I guess, I don't want to say Asian practice because it's more global at this point, but
Well, that's the origins, yeah.
yeah. And was going to say one thing I found frustrating, with people assuming about my politics is, I grew up Christian and very even like evangelical family. But being black, most people, can assume which way I vote. And a lot of people I talk to sometimes they, well, you say, well, I vote differently because I'm Christian and this is what the Bible tells me to
Oh,
do. And
that's
I'm
a
like,
first.
I grew up, it's like I'm and then so I'm like, I grew up Christian,
Yeah.
very like very religious. And I believe the opposite in part because of that same upbringing. So, so we have to take ownership of our whatever conclusions we're coming to and opinions we're coming to is not quite so simple. And my parents really, the Christianity they practice is just that God is love and love is the most important thing and accepting others and committing yourself to that. And that really have two spinning circles. Can you still hear me?
I can still hear you and see you. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? You must have gotten knocked out.
Am I coming in clearly?
So I can hear you fine. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
trying to remember what the last thing I said was.
Oh gosh. But we were talking about Buddhism and Hinduism and
Yes. Oh, my parents were modeling love. That was the
Oh,
big
yeah.
lesson I took growing up with. And just doing for others and sharing and devoting yourself to others. And I never personally felt that welcome in the Christian community like my parents do. They've chosen that life. And so, but that foundation it gave me very much informs my politics and why I came to Zen, ultimately. And
Did you know your wife when you went to Zen, or did you meet her after?
so I met her, yes, we've been together for our entire adult lives. We met as
Okay.
college freshmen, and we dated for 4 years in college. So for about the first 8 years, I was just kind of atheist.
I was
And I
curious if you
was,
ever considered Hinduism.
for her, like if I even brought that up, for her, it's kind of like, I don't even know what that means to, for you to be Hindu, because it's for the way she's experienced it, it's very much an ethnic thing.
Right, lifestyle, yeah.
So it's just
Interesting.
like, so conversion is just not even on her radar or what it's like to be someone who and I think for her and her brother there's been a disconnect between what their Hinduism even is because their parents adopted a different form of Hinduism than the kind they were born into,
Oh, okay.
but their grandparents still practiced the original form. And so they get these
Interesting.
diverse mixed things, and it's hard for them to tease out what is what. So they are very much culturally Hindu. And for my wife, she defines her religious practice as her dance.
Oh, she
Because,
does Indian dance?
yes, she's an
Oh,
Indian classical
wow.
dancer,
Oh,
she's a
my
Kuchipudi
gosh.
dancer. And so since they're dancing, most of these stories are from classical Indian or
Right.
classical Hindu stories. So that for
Right.
her is her religious tie.
Interesting. I'd love to see her dance. And then your kids, I guess, just take everything in stride.
Yeah, they just take everything in. Their mom, like the grandparents are a different Hinduism from their mom. You know, their grandparents on my side are Christian and dad's Buddhist, and it's kind of you. Good luck,
Well,
make of it what you will.
I think we're getting low on time. I have one other question, if you don't mind me asking. How have you viewed this whole past year with the George Floyd and all the monuments? I mean, I'm really curious as to how that's affected you.
So, I generally am not the kind of person drawn to protest. I'm much more of a conversational, those quiet connections and making and that sort of progress. But in this case, in this year, I really wanted to be out there. And I probably would have been were it not for, you know, I had two young kids and it was COVID and my wife and parents were both like, you know, don't take that risk. But I was, I think what really upsets me is not so much the killing of so many young black men. That, I mean, it's tragic, but I just kind of took that for granted. The hard part for me was seeing the American justice system fail us. Because I grew up just kind of with a unchallenged belief that, you know, our politicians cared about us or our judges, that the system, when presented with something just clearly wrong, would be just. And seeing the cases and politicians time and time again side with, you know, here's the situation, you know, the cop killed a person, you know, it's fine, it must have been justified. And in no other context would that benefit of the doubt be given. And so I'm, you know, and I, the reality of my life, the only time I get tense and scared and threatened is when I'm driving and there's police sirens. Because in no other environment am I in a situation where, okay, this person is empowered to kill me, and if they do, there won't be repercussions. That guy can do it, he's going to get away. Anyone else, even if you know, there's a racist neighbor, that person would likely get repercussions, but the cop won't. And so that is the scariest moment for me. And
Wow, I can't even imagine what that must feel like.
it's also the reality that at the same time, who are you going to call? You're going to call the cops if anything scary happens. And but in and I sit with that at the exact same time that my reality has been that in my life, I've had predominantly positive interactions with cops. They've been nice to me. And but at the same time, I'm very conscious that I'm going to smile the whole time and I'm going to try to put you at ease. I can't imagine how some people just, when a cop walks up and they just snap at them and, or yell or anything. And this is, you know, regardless of race, I can't imagine how anyone has that comfort or confidence that they can do that and get away with it. For me, that's just like, okay, this is a life or death moment. Smile, be your best, say sir, don't do anything. Keep this guy feeling not threatened. And so this past year, those protests spoke specifically to that. This was, you're looking at it, and the now, this cop ultimately was held guilty, but we didn't know that back then. Of course, there are many, many other ones that have not been. And so it's speaking precisely to that threat. And we're going through this at the same time that people tell us, you know, you need to, you know, is. You have to bear arms to protect yourselves from a tyrannical government. And here it's very clear that the whole part, like part of why this is outrageous, is that cops are killing unarmed black men the unarmed part is part of their innocence. It's just assumed that they were armed and maybe it would be justified. Mm. It would not be making us safer. And this is literally the government killing us. And so it's a very clear disconnect that people just don't seem to be aware of. And protesting at times just seems to be like, what else can you do?
Yeah, but wow.
I will say, I was very moved by this past year because this was the first time I saw so many white people out on behalf of Black people. And I was very moved by that, especially people my age. They're just like, it's just unquestioned. They're just there.
Yeah, that's so great. I have to say that I have a lot of white friends who have told me they just didn't get it before. But this whole thing has finally brought them to a point where they finally see what it really is. Yeah, as much as a white person can see is what it's like for a Black man in our society. So it is making some, having some effect. But wow. Yeah,
my wife is, it was scary for her because, she's married to a Black man and she's raising a Black son.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
At the same time that, she's also an immigrant family. That's a whole different can of worms.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I was about to go down that path,
We'll have to cover that another time.
Yeah. It's, a scary moment for us was when the Muslim travel ban was passed. This is very early on. Mm-hmm. Her mom was in India. And it's one of those things, it's like, India's not on the list, but it's one of the largest Muslim countries in the world. Yeah. And you don't know if the person working airport security that day really knows the difference between people. And our son was so young, you cannot explain to him what's going on. So it's been a lot.
Yeah, you've been through a lot, just a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Well, I'm impressed. I'm impressed that you seem to have a gracious, open heart about it. I give you a kudos for that. It's hard, I think, must be hard to go through all that and still remain open and hopeful. So I'm glad to see that.
Thank you. I credit my upbringing a lot, which was just very much that people are complex. I know a lot of people I grew up with voted for this, and I won't let that toss out what I experienced with them growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned or alluded to earlier, I didn't have a built-in home amongst Black people either.
Right.
So I've just like my wife has felt an outsider amongst Indians.
Okay. You're a chameleon. So, you're a chameleon. That's how I describe myself.
We're right there in the periphery, just kind of try not to make this academic, but what comes to mind is W.E.B. Du Bois's double consciousness. It's just, you have that view at all times. You're never really on, you don't have the privilege of just being able to see things one way. It would be comforting, but life hasn't been comfortable enough to let us just have one view.
Well, but I think ultimately more people having more than that one view is the answer, hopefully.
Yes. Yes. This is going way back to the beginning, but what brought you to the neighborhood?
Well, I'd lived in the next county east for 25 years, raised my kids. They went to school there and went through a divorce and grew up in a very small town and wanted more of that small town feeling, wanted a garden. The fellow I'm dating is from Goochland. And so I started looking and found a place I liked here and just loved the neighborhood. So,
yeah. We just drove through there this weekend. We did a road trip to Charlottesville.
So. Wow, isn't that something? Well, Yeah, so that's basically why we ended up here. And if you've seen all the changes on the signs, I don't know if you are on Facebook. I'm one of the board members that did all that. So, but I'm looking forward to getting to know you guys in person. I hope maybe you're open to that and spend a little more time together. It's been interesting. Funny way to find a neighbor, but a good way.
Yes, I think my wife will be very interested too.
Oh, great. What's her name?
Amaya.
Amelia. Mm-hmm. Amaya. Okay.
And and you know, we know that this neighborhood has more diversity than what it seems like.
Yeah.
Even one of our neighbors, you know, you just look if people drive by and you just see mostly white people.
Yeah.
But you know, it's not that simple. I know one recently moved here from England, so completely different.
Yes. Yes. She's delightful. I've met her. But yeah. Yeah. I have to ask you, there was an incident that somebody related to me about an African-American man in the neighborhood that some woman ran into her house and hid. That was that you?
No.
Okay.
No, like
he was walking down the street or jogging or something, and she ran into her house and slammed the door. And so that has been a conversation, and it's been interesting to follow. And my advice was, well, you know, he's new to the neighborhood, so I guess probably you've been here longer. But people were saying, what should we do? And I said, well, how about going over and introducing yourself to say I'm a neighbor? It'd be nice if they did the opposite, but you know, it was an interesting thread to see that.
We went on walks a little bit earlier when we first moved in, but we have not much in a while.
Yeah, I haven't been walking. I was in a bad car accident about a year and a half ago, and I'm still trying to walk from it. I've been in and out of a wheelchair, but getting there. So hopefully I'll be at the point where I can walk sometime soon.
Yeah, I hope so. It's a beautiful neighborhood to walk.
It is. It is. And I think the people in general are very nice. It's just ignorance. Ignorance and fear, I think, are two the two things that need to change. Yeah, but I'm delighted to find you here.
Thank you.
But it's interesting. We talked a little bit. I talked about not really feeling prejudiced, but I always felt kind of torn between two cultures, like the Indian and the American, like you said, your wife does a little bit. So we'll have to talk more about that sometime. I see you signaling. Are we out of time? Okay.
Oh, okay.
So what do we do now?
So I very... very glad that this worked out the way it did and I got to meet you. And you are an example that you know, no one's story is as simple as you might assume, just seeing them. You know, if we were just walking by, I might have assumed you were just another white neighbor who grew up here and has been living here for 50 years. Just because most of our immediate neighbors have been living here.
Although I probably would have stopped and talked to you. As you can tell, I'm not really shy.
That's good. That's good. We haven't met anyone outside of our... haven't met that many people outside of our street yet. So
there you go. We'll change that.